VentureCast.
Jennifer Allenbaugh is the founder of the Neurodefiant Collective and owns a coaching practice, Expansive Expressions, that exists to transform culture for late-identified autistic and ADHD entrepreneurs. Jennifer is a queer, fat, gender-expansive, scrappy, hilarious, fiercely kind human that has huge dreams of collective liberation and smashing oppressive systems. But to get here, she first had to discover, in her 40s, that she was autistic and had ADHD, then retire from her 15-year career as a complex trauma therapist and rebuild her life and work from scratch, neurodivergently. This is her story.
One, two, three, four.
You're listening to Permission to Live. I'm your host and certified life coach, Melissa Lyon West. Here on Permission to Live, we're going to share powerful stories of women who turned a midlife crisis into a badass life. We'll share the good, the bad, and the ugly that comes when you finally say yes to yourself and why it is always worth it. Jennifer, thank you for coming on Permission to Live. Your story is so intriguing. So I can't wait to hear how you got here. How did you get here?
Thank you so much for inviting me here. I'm excited. Let's go back. So as a complex trauma therapist, several years ago, I began to notice a lot of patterns among my complex trauma clients who were being curious about neurodivergence. And there was some information beginning to come out around like acquired neurodivergence that is the result of complex PTSD, depression, anxiety, circumstantial life experiences, as well as like the, I'm not sure what it's called, maybe like the innate neurodivergence of autism, ADHD, where like a person is born with a brain that is this way.
So you could either acquire it through life circumstances, or you're born viewing the world differently and your brain working differently.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we go any further, like for those of us who don't know all the things about all the words, tell me a little bit about what neurodivergence means.
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of my favorite resources that I point people to who has recently posted a lot about what the word neurodivergent means is the Lived Experience Educator. So neurodivergence, think of it as an umbrella. And under that umbrella are all different kinds of neurotypes. So autistic, ADHD, dyslexia, there's a lot, so I don't remember them all. That all describes neurodivergence. Sometimes people interchange the word neurodiverse and neurodivergent. So neurodiverse are the population of people who have different neurotypes.
Okay.
If I'm in a room with someone with Tourette's and someone who's neurotypical and someone who's ADHD and I'm autistic ADHD, we are a neurodiverse group of people. And for those of us who are not neurotypical, we have neurodivergent brains.
Okay.
So just diverging from the norm, which we all know is like decided by white supremacy, right?
What? Surely not.
Surprise!
Okay. I feel like this conversation is going to go off in so many different ways and I cannot wait for it. Okay. Also, you're in a very conservative state, right?
I am.
Yeah. And yes. I feel like I remember talking to you about that kind of came into play in your decision to leave your career, right?
Yes.
I know we're getting a little off here, but like.
No, with my autistic ADHD brain, I see everything is connected. I'm a fan of rabbit trails.
Oh, then we are going to get along on this podcast. Let's just chase all the things.
Yes. So I currently live and work in Texas. I work and live on the unceded stolen lands of the Tonkawa and the Payaya people. But understanding my location as a white person, as a descendant of settler colonizers, has been an essential piece of my learning and growth. I do this work here, and Texas is complicated, and it is a challenging state to be someone who is not a cishet white Christian male, but then next in line, female men and women. So over the last couple of years, there have been different legislation that has come down the pike that used to target kind of just general human rights, whether that's reproductive rights or trans rights. And as a licensed therapist, there are certain things that I am required to do or abide by legally in accordance with the state board licensing. And I've been finding that kind of the farther we go, the more legislation that comes out that's violating human rights, the more I think with kind of the responsibility, the legal responsibilities of my license and like my own personal ethics. And the straw that broke the camel's back, as it were, I think around this time last year, the governor released a letter. So it wasn't even a law, it was a letter encouraging the Child Protective Services to investigate providers of trans-affirming care to youth as abusers. So he wanted to encourage people report teachers, parents, doctors, whomever, who are providing trans-affirming care. Like, he wanted that to be a reportable abuse. So for folks who are not familiar with Texas, even though that's not a law, and that is just a letter that the governor put out, Texans love taking things in their own hands and running with it, right?
Yes,
so,
they do.
So many families have been already harmed by this and have been reported to Child Protective Services for supporting their trans kids, for seeking out trans-affirming care. And it has become a very dangerous environment.
It's so frustrating because there's so few safe places to start with.
Right.
And then you're going to target the few people who are saying, yes, we will affirm, we will care, we will be a safe place. And they're like, actually, we're just going to weasel in.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that was a major thing that I came upon as a therapist. I'm required to report things that are reportable. And that was just kind of the final straw of like, nope. If I'm working with a family who is supporting their trans kid, there is no effing way I'm going to report them.
Yeah.
I am going to support them. I'm going to encourage them. And as a provider of trans-affirming trauma therapy, I was concerned about, you know, all it takes is like one transphobic parent who's ticked off about what I'm doing. They report me to the board and then my livelihood is threatened. Or, you know, with the reproductive right in Texas, the law is that anyone who provides information to a person about reproductive options can be sued by the state. So any person. So like if I have a window open and neighbor walks by and I'm talking to somebody about here are your options, they could go report me just for providing information, right? So, and that's part of my job as a therapist. Like, let's talk through options. Here are the different courses you could take. So yeah, I just came to a place where I don't want my livelihood to be on the line like that. And I'm not willing to compromise my ethics. And so I'm like, technically, it's like I would have to be doing like less and less legal stuff to align with my values that are not where the state is.
It's interesting because a lot of people that I talk to, they're changing jobs, they're changing careers, they're finding something new because it's not satisfying or it's not fulfilling, or it's very rarely, maybe you're the first one I've talked to, that's actually changing because to be who they are is becoming illegal, right? Like to say and to care for.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting, like that you are having to step away from something because it's no longer safe, honestly, like, right? Like it's no longer safe for your livelihood. Yeah. How was that? Did you still love it?
I did. And I appreciate this question and I'm like connecting to emotions that I didn't think I had. Yeah, there was this element of grief and loss. Spent 15 years as a therapist. I invested a lot of money and time and my own personal therapy journey through trauma and healing to show up in a way that is healthy and intersectional and trauma informed to my clients. And to think about leaving that or setting that aside came with so many different feelings. And yet at the end of the day, I could not tune out dissonance that I would continue to feel having to straddle these lines. And maybe it's the older I get or the more I become myself, I have less F's to give about.
You can say it.
Okay, good. Yeah. I fucking love it.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I have less fucks to give around, like I'm done performing. So yeah, that was the main catalyst of I need to find something else to do that's not therapy. And I need something that has the flexibility so that I can continue to serve people that I want to serve without the threat of being reported or sued by the state or losing my access to my livelihood.
You just said, like, I don't want to perform. I don't want to conform. That is such a dangerous place for the system when women get there.
Oh, yeah.
I was just this morning talking to a client and she was just like, I am so fucking done.
Yeah.
I am so fucking done. And I said this to her, I said, this place that you're in right now, this is what the system, the patriarchy, it's all been to keep you from getting here.
Yes.
Right? The being done with performing, being done with conforming, being done with like forcing yourself into this job that is stripping you of your peace and your, you know, caring for yourself and your mental health. And you're like, fuck it. No, as much as I love this, I'm not conforming anymore. And that, I mean, going back to what you said, smashing oppressive systems, that's it, right? And, but I also just want to hold space for the fact that there's grief there, right? Like when I stepped away from my group and I had to leave behind so much, there is this grief that's still present, right?
Yeah.
And it's both. Like I know that I am in the right space and I have a peaceful life. I have a happy life, but there's also grief from having to step away from something that you wanted it to be the right thing and you wanted it to hold space for you. And I hear a little bit of the same thing in what you're saying. Like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to be something they want. Fuck it. I'm stepping outside of the system and I'm going to wreak havoc in the most beautiful way. Right.
Yes. And you're absolutely on point with that. I have this conversation so often with folks that there is this idea that we are disqualified from grieving if we choose to end the thing. Like somehow we don't have a right to grieve it if it was our choice or if we initiated the end of a thing, which I think is total bullshit. Like, I don't know who came up with that idea, but they're wrong.
I could give one guess.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like all the guesses go back to the
It all goes back to the patriarchy, right? I've had to disconnect and step away from people that it breaks my heart. I was just talking to somebody about this a couple of days ago. And like you said, just because you make the decision doesn't mean you can't have two feelings. I'm sad and I'm grieving, but also my life, I told them this. I said, think about your nervous system, right? Like my nervous system is so calm now that that person's not in my life. If the person is constantly activating your fight, flight, all those things, right? It's okay to say this, the way that you are right now is not serving my mental health and my nervous system, all this, but I'm still going to grieve it. I still wanted you in my life.
Right.
In your career, like I still wanted that.
Yeah, I loved being a therapist. I was really good at it. I have walked with hundreds of people from a place of barely surviving through healing into thriving, and they're doing amazing things. And I love, you know, that moment of like, oh, my little birdies are leaving the nest. They're like ready and they're whole and they are in beautiful relationship with themselves. Like, that's an extraordinary feeling and experience, the privilege and absolute non-toxic religious sacredness of sitting with folks in these intense times and these vulnerable spaces, and through relationship, they move to a different place. That's an incredible experience. And yeah, there's so much that was difficult for me to think about leaving, then also just to think about that's what I do. I'm good with people. I have been immersed in trauma-informedness and the intersections of not just the micro system of trauma in our interpersonal lives, but like the macro system of, yes, what is the trauma that patriarchy is perpetuating, that racism, that poverty, all of these things create ongoing complex trauma for all of us. Like every single person is harmed by white supremacy.
So you're in this place where you're like, this doesn't feel like ethically, I can't keep doing this, right? Like you're almost getting to the point where you feel like you're harming people because you're not able to give them the truth and the care. What's the story there of how you moved on? And when are you finding out that you're autistic and that you have ADHD? Like that's no small thing in all of that, right?
Yeah. So that, like, I'll call it my awakening into my autistic ADHD identity. That began happening like late 2020 and for sure in like the winter of 2021. And there is this week that I will probably never forget. It was such a catalyst for a lot of things for me. It's the week that Texas froze. For those who weren't in Texas, like our power grid failed because of failed leadership. And many of us, including myself, spent days like with no electricity, no heat, and freezing temperatures.
Which Texas is not set up for.
Right. And it was a traumatic event in and of itself. And I remember there was just this perfect storm of several professional circumstances that were out of my control that were happening. Like I was being called to do something that was not in the best interest of my client, but like it was a court order. So I couldn't disagree. And so feeling that conflict, freezing, and just having this experience of like, I can't do this anymore because all of my clients are in Texas too. So they were all freezing as well. And and having this experience of like, okay, I've been in the pandemic along with my clients. I'm just froze along with my clients. Like it is one thing to work as a therapist and have like, I have stuff in my past that, you know, sometimes relates to my clients. It is another thing entirely to be simultaneously experiencing the same large scale trauma that my clients are, that I'm like, I don't know what the fuck.
Can't help you because I can't help myself right now.
And I hate it. And it's oppressive. And all of the things that, you know, the kind of peripheral systemic things that came out of the pandemic, it just kind of culminated in that week. I was like, this is too much. I don't know how to do this work anymore because like these traumatic things, this like trauma is too big. Like I can't just intervention that away. It's going to still be there. And so there is an element of professional identity crisis of like what I've learned, what I've studied, like we have gone way past what that knowledge bank provided. And I felt no longer equipped to like, I don't know, I'm just fucking making this up like the rest of us.
Yeah. I saw this thing recently that said, it's one thing if a handful of people are going through something traumatic and they need therapy. But when everybody needs therapy, right, it's really not about the person. It's about the whole system. And that's what I feel like I'm hearing you say, like, look, I can help you through some things, but the whole system is fucking us all over. And right, I can't just exist within it saying like, here's a Band-Aid, here's a Band-Aid.
Exactly. Yeah. So there is this element of like, I'm feeling burnt out from this.
Yeah.
Like systemically, not, you know, like I've never ever felt in my entire career, I've never felt burnt out from my clients. My clients give me life. It's the systemic element of things that burn out. So in kind of this mess of freezing misery, I was also in a space of just really connecting a lot of dots of like, huh, all these neurodivergent memes really relevant to my life.
Oh, shoot. And they're really hitting home.
I'm in all of them. Like that. Yep, that's me, same. So maybe there's something I should explore here. And so yeah, as much grief that social media gets, I like, yep, learned about myself from TikTok and memes. And I think social media is probably at least a decade ahead of where actual research is in terms of understanding the lived experience of autistic people and ADHD folks. And the population of folks who are most hooked are women, non-binary folks who were socialized as girls, so essentially trained to perform and conform like dutiful little girls.
Yes.
And, you know, Black women, Indigenous women, queer, gender expansive folks. So like population that gets overlooked for all the things, right? We present differently than this white male boy who, you know, is totally consumed with trains and doesn't talk to anybody, right? Like the very stereotype idea, like the external interpretation of what autism looks like.
I mean, what you're saying sounds so familiar to almost all scientific study, all medical care. It's like, oh, there are women here too. Oh, there are non-binary folks here too. Should we talk about them? Should we care for them?
I mean, I still always think about, it was like a year or so ago that I read this story about a Black med student who made the first, this was in like 2020-ish era, the first photographic encyclopedia of what do skin conditions look like on Black skin. This is the first, like nobody before this has thought, hey, maybe skin conditions or things show up differently on Black skin, on brown skin. Maybe we should have, yeah. So it's like that.
Yep. Yep.
All the things go back. So I definitely did the like, let me deep dive and learn everything that I could possibly learn off the internet, like women and autism, femme people and autism and ADHD. Took all the quizzes everywhere. And I remember one of my friends, I was like having this kind of like autistic imposter syndrome going. And one of my friends was like, "So, Jen, you know that like taking all of the quizzes to see if you're autistic is autistic as fuck. So, like, you just validated your own." Like, oh, reminds me of my journey into my queerness. So, my gender expansiveness. Like, oh, like straight cis people don't take all those quizzes and read all the articles and go down the rabbit holes of like, what is gender?
I was raised in, strict religion. There was one path for men, one path for women. There was no questions, right, at all. There was no stepping off the path. And so, here I am. I was 37 last year, and I start to like my sexuality. I'm like, who am I? Which is a whole unraveling process anyway. But I started saying things like, what, do all women not appreciate each other like this? Is this not appreciation? Because I just had in my mind, I just appreciate women, right? I'm attracted to men, but I appreciate women. And I remember my partner being like, okay, if that's how you want to think about it. But yeah, it's kind of this like, you have this hesitancy to say like, oh, that's me, right? Like I'm bisexual because you, for so long, you've put yourself or other people have put you in this box, and you're like, well, this is who I am over here. And it is hard. It's hard to like say, to step out and be like, actually, there's more to me than just this thing.
And there's so much gatekeeping in the world, right? We learn like I can't claim that for myself. Like someone else has to come tell me I'm this, and then I can tell other people I'm this, right? And it's fascinating. Piece just clicked for me. I used to hold writing circles for women, and at the beginning I would ask like, do you call yourself a writer? And so many of them are like, no. And I'm like, but like how many stacks of journals do you have full of your own writing, right? And so we would talk about like, well, I feel like an imposter. I feel like a publisher has to tell me that I'm a writer, or some other famous writer has to tell me I'm a writer to be able to claim that. And I realized like I went through that in my queerness journey. I went through that in my gender expansive. And I was like, well, maybe I just like want to be autistic because the cool kids are autistic. Again, somebody was like, if you think autistics are the cool kids, believe you're also autistic. And I was like, I don't know. But yeah, we are trained to, especially women, non-binary, gender expansive folks, we are trained to like wait on the gatekeepers to tell us. I mean, even now, there's an immense amount of medical gatekeeping for the trans community, which is ridiculous. And I won't go into all that.
Oh,
But
we could be here all day if we started talking about all the gatekeeping. But the title of this podcast is Permission to Live. The thing is, we're always looking outside of ourselves for permission to do the thing, be the thing, call ourselves, the feeling. My hope is that everybody listening to these stories, right? Someone listening to your story being like, oh, I see parts of myself in that story, and they gave themselves permission to XYZ, then saying like, okay, I can do it too, right?
Yeah,
Because fuck the
absolutely.
gatekeepers. Like, who put them in charge anyway? And they're usually white, straight men, right? I mean, let's just call it like we see it.
Right. And that, what you said is so on point. I think storytelling, like I used to do a lot of poetry writing and spoken word and in writing circle with other folks, kind of the building up of getting to the place where you share your work out loud. And so many conversations around when we share our story, we give others permission to connect with that, permission to speak up and use their voice. There is this like resounding medicinal me too that happens. And it is so cool. And like you have lived through, so many of us have lived through, we are separated and silent because they know the power that is in sharing our stories and making connections. And it's not that suddenly autism is popular. It's people have started sharing their stories, and someone like me says, oh, me too. So that's not something that happens to everybody, or that's not how everybody's brain works. Oh, okay. Well, let me look more into this, right? And yeah, our power is in our storytelling. Our power is in getting to that place where, you know what? Fuck all the norms. I'm done. I'm done performing for the male gaze. I'm done performing for capitalism. I'm done performing for religion. And yeah, like the more things we cast off, like the easier it is to get rid of our fucks to give.
Yes.
About those things.
It's so much weight. Like all of these people's opinions, it's so much weight. It's like we're just carrying around this box full of rocks on our back. And we're like, why is life so hard? Why is it so hard to like figure out how to be happy? Oh, wait, maybe it's all these rocks people keep putting in this fucking box. Yeah.
Yes. And that's, I love that you said that, because that's how I approach mindset work. And it's so interesting to me. Sometimes people are like, mindset is not like the vibes only kind of stuff, or like no pain, no gain. And I was like, that's what you think mindset work is? No. Mindset work is mindset, how we think about ourselves, how we perceive ourselves, that is informed by everybody who's told us something about ourselves since conception, right? And we do, we have this bag of rock that we've been schlepping around, that if we take it out and look at it, like that's not actually what we think or believe about ourselves. But we've been trained to think and believe that about ourselves because of these systems that we are brought up in. Then we carry them around. And so the work that I do in mindset work is, let's get rid of those and see what you're able to do. You know, like if you cut the ropes on a hot air balloon, it flies.
Yeah.
So I think about, like, that's how I approach the work of like, let's get rid of all this stuff that has been imposed on us and see who you really are and what is it that you want to be and do in the world? And you know, that to me is thrilling.
I this is one of my favorite topics, right? This is one of my favorite, like the shitty thoughts. I always say to my clients, like, we are not born with any of these thoughts. These like negative, hateful thoughts that we have about ourselves, we're not born with them. Those are given to us. Mm-hmm. And when we look at them, like you said, like when you look at them and be like, wait, this is given to me by my dad or by my teacher or mm-hmm. by my community. I don't want to carry this around. It's ugly. It's heavy. And getting rid of that, right? Like one thing at a time. So as coaches, I know like we get like so excited about this and we're like, yes, it's going to change. It's going to change everything. But for somebody who maybe isn't like, you know, nerding out about it as much as we do, what would you say was the first step in that? Like, what's like one or two things that somebody who is at this point where they're like, okay, I'm learning about myself. I am curious that maybe I'm not exactly who I thought I was or who they're telling me. What now? Like that could be a really overwhelming thought when you get to the point where you're like, okay, so all these were given to me and I don't even know who I am and I don't know what to do now. I'm just going to like go crawl under the blankets and scroll for 4 hours.
Yeah. I mean, that's valid. And I have been there before.
I mean, same.
I remember not actually answering your question, but it's in my brain and I wanted to say it. So here we go. I had this really, really cool moment with a person in my life who just like, because I was no longer a part of any religious thing, they were just like, well, what could even possibly exist between us if we can't talk about religion anymore? And I had this moment where I was like, you know what? That's not my problem. Like, if you are not interested in knowing, I'm a whole person. If you're not interested in knowing the whole person. And we were sitting at a table at a restaurant. And I remember I made this movement of like pushing something back across the table. I said, you know what, that is your shame. And I'm giving it back to you. I am done carrying it with me. And I stood, got up and walked away and like had a little panic attack in my car afterwards, because it was like the scariest, bravest, most amazing, terrifying thing that I've ever done in my life. And I just like, I come back to that. And even just that motion, like that's something that I do sometimes when I'm battling like this thing belief that's like trying to take up space and being really loud. And I have to just say, you know what, that's not even mine. I'm giving it back. I'm not receiving it.
Yes.
Return to sender.
Yes. And that, like you said, that action that you're doing, so like taking your hands and pushing it away, pushing it back across the table, is so powerful. There's a powerful visual, and it's like it's almost like you're taking back the power, right? You're like,
yes,
this oh goodness, just lost my train of thought. I was talking to my sisters and we had just seen this TikTok of this woman who was working at a hotel desk, and this customer comes in super rude, throws his card down, and he's like, give me what I want. That's kind of the gist of the story. She takes the card, she pushes it back across the table, across the counter, and says, I do not receive this. And yes. And so when I saw that, it was the first time it gave words and actions for giving back a thought or a feeling or energy that you don't want to carry and hold. And my sisters and I have started doing that. We'll either say, like, if somebody says something kind to us, we'll like slide it toward us and say, I receive that. Or if we're talking about somebody else's opinions and thoughts, just like that action, pushing your hand away, I do not receive that. Mm-hmm. Giving words to it. Yes. I'm going to say that's number one. I know you said you were going to answer, but like, I think that's one thing that is really like such a helpful tool is to acknowledge what somebody else is trying to give you and saying, mm-hmm. oh, wait, I get a choice here. I don't have to take this.
Right. Because it's somatic. When we do receive it, we feel it in our bodies. Our whole body feels like shit. And, you know, like it impacts us. It's our pulse racing. It affects the rest of our afternoon. I mean, I've had interactions with rude, awful people, and I'm like hyped up for a while. Like, and so the action provides like the somatic outlet. And I think about, I am not well versed in, not versed at all in Tai Chi, but it makes me think of one of those movements. And I love the aspect of Tai Chi that is just kind of working with your energy, protecting it, and like moving the bad air out. And so I think about that in this motion. I also think about some of the other things that I've used in talking about this kind of thing with folks is imagine that people in our lives are holding up mirrors, but they're not like true mirrors. They're carnival mirrors. So when we look at them, we see this distorted picture. If those are the only mirrors that we've seen, well, yeah, then we think we're this like wobbly, weird, big head, tiny body looking person. And then a person comes along, maybe it's a therapist or partner, somebody with a true mirror, and that looks distorted in comparison to what we have, the reflection that we've seen all our lives. But it's the true reflection. And so that is another way of looking at like how we perceive ourselves is shaped by environments that we're around. If they're holding up these fucked up mirrors, there's no way that we can absorb like a true knowledge of who we are.
That's such a powerful visual. And if you think about the systems and the places that we put ourselves in by choice and by where we were born into, right? And thinking about all the different ways that people are showing us who we are. Mm-hmm. And I just see you as this like, it's just like this soft revolution of feeling like, you know what? I'm taking care of myself and I'm stepping away from all of these mirrors that are not reflecting back to me. And in doing so, showing other people, hey, you can make hard choices and set strong boundaries, get away from that distortion and that place that's not safe and that's not holding care for you. Like everything from like the medical definitions of things to a workplace that's asking you to be somebody that you're not and not being a safe place that you know that you want to be. And I'm just so grateful for your presence and your this action of bravery of saying, I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to honor who I am. And I always say the more selfish we are, the more we take care of our true self, the more the ripple effects. And it changes everybody around us. And it's not hard work. It's the work of taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, I felt that so keenly. Like, I mean, we can have a whole other conversation about this, but after leaving religion, I was like, wait a minute, I can love people better now that I'm loving myself. Like it comes more naturally because I'm less critical of myself. I'm less critical of others because I am, you know, pausing to check in with myself. I pause to check in with others. It's an amazing thing what happens when we start at the center, doing the work of healing our relationship with ourselves, and just a natural byproduct of that. Like you said, it's not all this extra work. It is just a natural outflowing. And I've talked about this with folks coming into their autistic ADHD identity. It's like once we have a name for it and have this realization of like, oh, I can stop tolerating things like the shirt that has a stupid tag in it that's just like acting my, like I could cut it out. I could accommodate myself. I could chuck the shirt. I don't have to put up with it because I'm no longer working under the assumption that I'm a failed human. I'm now working under the understanding that I have different sensory needs and it's okay to take care of them.
Yes, because what good does it do to constantly be beating ourselves down for whatever our special circumstances are, the things that we need. Right. Like, who's to say that just because we need something, that's bad? Like, okay, that's just bullshit that we're given, right? And so this idea of like, yeah, I'm different. Yeah, I need something different. And that's wonderful and amazing that I know that. And now I'm going to cut the damn tag out.
Exactly. So I was just going to say one of the other imagery things that I have found helpful and I've given to other folks, and especially in the pandemic times, that's relevant. I also think about, like, in addition to this movement, I talk about putting on your emotional hazmat suit, right? So hazmat suit, full protective gear, like not a single thing can get in and touch the skin, right? And so I think about, like, sometimes I'm working with folks who are like, okay, that's cool, you know, cutting off people who are toxic, but like, what about the people you can't cut off, like coworkers or, you know, people who you still need to interact with? And so I bring up my hazmat suit idea that, you know, think about, like, the preparation of putting on your emotional hazmat suit is getting into the space of what comes at me. It might hit me with the suit on, but it's not going to permeate that and infect me. So it will hit me and bounce off. So I'm going to go into the event experience interaction with this, you know, kind of mental emotional protection on, and realize that, yeah, stuff can be flying in your direction, but the hazmat suit protects us from being infected by it. Similarly, like a bulletproof vest, like, sure, you might have a bruise, but like, you're not, like, the bullet didn't penetrate.
Yeah.
So it's protective.
I love all of these visuals. the idea of just like preparing to go in. Like, I'm putting this on and nothing you say, nothing you do is like, I don't give a fuck, because I've got this suit on that your disease cannot get to me, right? Like, your hatred. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I love this. Okay. So you said, like, the pushing away, like, I do not receive this, right? Mm-hmm. The action, and then just like, and then the wonky mirrors, thinking about how other people are reflecting back. Are they reflecting the truth of who you are? Or are they reflecting a distorted version based on their own trauma and their own experiences?
Right.
And then this idea of the hazmat suit, preparing for when you, right. Because you can't just cut everybody off that is not great for you.
Yeah.
You have to exist in the world. I love those three ideas. Okay.
And with the hazmat suit, there's also the after part, right? Because, I mean, I get this from, like, infection movies that I've seen, but the after part, there's also aftercare in, you go through decontamination, you remove all of that gear and you incinerate it, like, you get rid of it. So there's also this piece of, you know, and I've done this, guys, when I've had to go, you know, interact with somebody that was problematic. After that, I would specifically, and it's jotting down a list of, like, things that are true, things that are bullshit, like, reground myself in what is real and true. That was, like, my aftercare of, like, decontamination, for it is that helped the person kind of think through this stuff was thrown at me. It's contaminated. I'm not going to bring it home with me. I'm not going to bring it in the door with me. I'm not going to walk it all over my floors. I'm decontaminating. And so I can go about the rest of my day without this infection brewing.
Ooh, I just need to sit with that for a minute. That is so good. That is so good. The preparation, then your mindset is there. We're like, no, it's not going to infect me. It's not going to get to me. But then also, I'm not going to carry this with me, those thoughts, like, get them out, get them away.
Yes.
That is so good. It's almost like you fit a therapist or something.
I mean, what? Like, okay. I was using that analogy for a long time, and then the pandemic came and I was like, oh, everyone's going to understand this for sure now.
Yeah. Now you really know what I'm talking about, unfortunately. Okay. So tell us more, you know, we're kind of coming to the end of our time here. Tell us more about the work that you do now, because it's very, it's very specific to what you just heard and went through about yourself and how you're carrying that to help, you know, like we're saying, like, as you take care of yourself, then it naturally just overflows to take care of people around you. So tell us more about your coaching.
Yeah. So when I first started coaching, I was all over the place. And, you know, like, the number one rule of coaching is, like, don't be all over the place, niche down, have a specific. And of course, my, like, rebellious myself was like, no, I can do it.
I'm right there
Opinions
with
work with
you.
all the people, so fuck your niches.
That's exactly. I was like, no, I want to help everybody. Yeah, no, I hear you there.
So yeah, I had my own journey that I needed to go on to, you know, learn. There are so many iterations of like, let me launch this program and this group and this thing. And, you know, like I look upon that with affection. I'm not down on myself. Like that is part of the entrepreneurial journey. And so I think as I was going along, participating, you know, investing in coaching courses, like business coaching courses, copywriting courses, learning about marketing and like the stuff, I just began to realize like, my brain works differently about this too, because it works differently about all the things. But it just highlighted, there's a lot of like business coaching that just does not work for my autistic ADHD brain or self or my values. There are aspects of like what the mainstream marketing wisdom is that felt growth and out of alignment. And so these things begin to shape like a amorphous sort of blob of thought as I was connecting with more and more late-eyed autistic ADHD neurodivergent folks and understanding like, oh yeah, like we all gravitate toward entrepreneurship because the mainstream work world is inaccessible to us. And so we make up a huge body of entrepreneurs, and yet there are not a whole lot of specifically designed business support systems for neurodivergent folks. And so birthed the idea of like listening to conversations, listening to things that people talk. It's one of my strengths is like, I listen to all the things and then I'm like, oh, everybody said we need this thing that we don't have. Okay, let me build it. Let me work on that. So that's where the working with other late identified autistic ADHD entrepreneurs came into focus as like, yeah, I want to build this. I want to build what hopefully will become a disciplinary space to serve as incubator support system, you know, sustainability system for neurodivergent entrepreneurs.
I love that because so many of these like powerful things that are created by the people on the outside, the people on the outskirts who like, no, everyone's like, meh, we don't care about you. There's nothing for you. And you're like, fine, I'll build my own fucking thing. And then everyone else is like, yes, we've been waiting for this. So how do you help? Like, how does your coaching help these individuals who are learning, wait, I exist differently in business and I might need some extra support. How do you help?
Yeah. So at this point, the programs that I'm offering are group coaching programs. So one is an incubator program that's for like launch and very early entrepreneurs. So folks who are like, I have this idea, but I've never done it. Still have a 9-to-5 contemplating. And folks who are just at the beginning of their entrepreneurial journey. It's a year-long cohort program that we move through group coaching experiences to just like be a guidance and support system for people who are launching. And part of the structure of the group is like 6 months in, another cohort will begin. And so the elder cohort has an opportunity to mentor the incoming cohort and like share the space together for 6 months. And then that like used in cycles. The other group coaching membership is, you know, I encourage folks to be in there for a year or so just because I think time goes by fast, but it's group coaching for entrepreneurs who are maybe farther along in their entrepreneurship journey, for neurodivergent professionals who are wanting to make changes in their career or move up in their career and want support in advocating for themselves in moving into those higher level positions as the neurodivergent person, affirming themselves. And so that space has group coaching. We'll have like neurodivergent networking. And I'm also in the process of building an app that hopefully will come out this year, that I will put out this year, that is designed as to be a directory for neurodivergent entrepreneurs and professionals to connect us to each other And then also eventually there will be like corporate membership with corporation companies that are vetted specifically by like autistic ADHD people that are, you know, displaying neurodivergent affirmances and culture and, you know, process across the board, that they're vetted. They can be part of the directory as like, okay, I'm in tech and I want to work for somebody who is, you know, known as a neurodivergent company. Look in this directory and find them.
So many levels of support. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's an online community. There's weekly, we have weekly body doubling sessions. So there's not, that's just like folks join the Zoom and get work done at the same time, because sometimes that's helpful for us neurodivergent folks. Like, oh, you're working? I can work too. Yeah, let's be productive.
This is amazing. I'm going to put all of this information and your cohort, all of that in the show notes so that people can find you. I will carry this image of this hazmat suit forever. I'm like taking, that is so powerful.
I'm going to send you my favorite picture. It's a dog in a hazmat suit. And so I like claimed her as my mascot. So it's Hazel the hazmat dog. I'll send you that and you can have this little hazmat dog in your mind.
I will. I'll probably print it out and put it on my office wall because love that. I love the whole process of it. Not only preparing, putting it on, but then afterwards. I have loved talking to you. This has been such an amazing conversation. I don't want to cut it off, but it's running kind of long here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Likewise, love this conversation and look forward to continuing to support each other in the equally revolutionary work that we're both doing. I love it.
That's all for now, but I'm going to be back next Wednesday with another awesome episode. In the meantime, if you're feeling like you're on the first half of this life-changing awakening, you're ready for action, but you need clarity because you don't know what the hell to do next, then you've got to get on my email list. That's where I talk about walking with fear, gaining confidence, and living a life that serves you. You can sign up to receive my free guide called Unlocking Your Bad Bitch Magic. In this roadmap, you get the exact steps that I use to go from scared people pleaser to a confident badass. So that you can figure out your very next step. You can find it at melissalionwest.com/free or in the show notes below. Okay, I'll see you back here next week.
Mile, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the Wanna Bet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but Wanna Bet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, Roger.
Electric acid. Electric acid.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together, we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Electric acid.